Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSF.
Thank you, Simon Marks. Welcome to the show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, the award-winning journalist and author James Dellingpole joins the program this hour. I know that you're probably familiar with the Delling Pod, say it right, Rich. The Delling Pod, a terrific podcast, hugely successful. James has written for more newspapers than you've had hot dinners. We'll talk to him about the COVID response, the impact of it, free speech, cancel culture, and much more. And in the second hour, Piers Corbyn, of course, making national news headlines every other week. Good friend of ours. He is taking the Metropolitan Police to court. He's suing the police because he's been arrested. He's been fined. That infringes on his civil liberties. That's unfair. He'll be talking to us about that in hour two. James Dellingpole, Piers Corbyn, the guests on Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford, as you know by now, in, well, the wonderful state of Greater Manchester. Yes, good job and all. Good job to be with you. Bad week, bad day. For pubs. Where? Well, everywhere. Ireland, obviously. Here, England, Scotland, Wales. Terrible time for pubs. Now, Green King. If you're not in the UK, you mightn't know about it. It's a fairly big pub group. It's cutting 800 jobs. The tighter lockdown restrictions means that some of their pubs will have no choice but to close. This is Green King. Does a good point of cask-conditioned ale. None of this real ale garbage. When somebody says real ale, they don't know what they're talking about. Cask-conditioned ale. Green King said that 79 pubs will stay closed for the time being. One third of these will be shut permanently. Bad news. North of the border in Scotland, all pubs and restaurants, you've probably heard Simon on the news, all pubs and restaurants across central Scotland will be closed under new measures aimed to tackle the alleged surge in coronavirus cases in Scotland. These new rules applying to licensed premises across the central belt, including even Glasgow and Edinburgh. Well, let's hear from First Minister Nicola Sturgeon. She explained in Holyrood today why they're doing it. Here's Nicola Sturgeon.
Pubs, bars, restaurants and cafes will be able to operate indoors on the following very restricted basis only. During the day from 6am to 6pm for the service of food and non-alcoholic drinks only. Hotel restaurants will be able to operate beyond 6pm but only for residents and without alcohol. The reason we are not closing indoor hospitality completely is that we know the benefits in terms of reducing loneliness and isolation, of giving people, particularly those who live alone, somewhere they can meet a friend for a coffee and a chat. But the restrictions will be strictly applied, and all the current regulations and the limits on meeting a maximum of 6 people from 2 households in indoor public places will still apply. Again, with the exception of the central belt areas I will mention shortly, bars, pubs, restaurants and cafes can continue to serve alcohol outdoors up to the existing curfew time of 10pm and subject to the 6-2 rule on group size. We are introducing stricter restrictions in the following 5 health board areas: Greater Glasgow and Clyde, Lanarkshire, Ayrshire and Arran, Lothian and Forth Valley. In these areas, all licensed premises, with the exception of hotels for residents, will be required to close indoors and outdoors, though takeaways will be permitted. Hotels, as I've said, will remain open for residents. Cafes which don't have an alcohol license will be able to stay open until 6pm to support social isolation. In addition, snooker and pool halls, indoor bowling alleys, casinos and bingo halls will close in these areas for 2 weeks from the 10th of October. Contact sports for people aged 18 and over will be suspended for the next 2 weeks, wow, with an exception for professional sport. And indoor group exercise activities will not be allowed.
Indoor exercises activities won't be allowed. You heard all that there, Nicola Sturgeon. The damage to the economy, to people's lives. It's unimaginable, really. We've talked about this many, many, many times. Sturgeon saying, I'm going to take an axe, basically, a hatchet, basically to your lives. I'm going to destroy your lives. For a virus that doesn't affect or harm or kill the vast, vast majority of people, well, I'm going to destroy you. This is a more appropriate analogy referencing the Scottish, well, the British governments, the devolved governments. This is basically their approach to COVID. Have a listen.
Thatchers.
I beg pardon, sire. Won't we hit our own troops?
Yes. But we'll hit theirs as well. We have reserves. Attack.
Attack.
Archers.
Yes, and then the archers fire at the Scottish and the Irish, but kill loads of the English soldiers as well. That's the approach for a virus that is harmless to the vast majority of people on planet Earth. Right. Yeah, Braveheart there. Yeah, I know you got that. The average age of those who died with COVID in the UK to this point is 82. 82. I said this on Twitter today. The majority of those people had comorbidities, meaning that COVID didn't really kill them. It tipped them over the edge. They were unwell anyway. I'm going to keep saying it and repeating it time and time and time again. The virus is harmless for the vast majority of citizens on this planet. So you've got to ask what's really going on. And I tell you what, BBC Scotland yesterday published a story. This is true. Okay, if I got it here. I don't have it. Effectively saying the same thing, that the average age, this is on BBC Scotland, if you look this up, the average age of those dying with COVID, I think men 79, women 82, something like that. Or women 84. Mad. And I had a tweet from Jay. Jay is a disabled guy in his 20s. And like everybody else, you've got to admire the dignity of people who go through life with disabilities. I do, and I ain't virtue signalling, can't be easy. And you see people struggling and not struggling, never complaining and getting on with it. And you admire it. Jay's in his 20s, he's got a disability, and he tweeted me today. It's more to protect people like me, the lockdown. I'm in my 20s, never smoked or drank, but with illnesses that compromise my immune system, meaning any illness could kill me. I had the real flu 3 years ago, and I'm still not fully recovered. And I tweeted back to Jay saying, are you really asking people to do unimaginable, because we don't know just how bad it will be, damage to their livelihoods, to the point that the government itself said maybe 200,000 people will die because of lockdown, not because of COVID. Hundreds of billions of pounds that will need to be paid back. That will bring its own health misery, a tsunami of health problems. Are you really expecting people to go through that, Jay, to protect you? I asked him. And I put it to Jay that, you know, you would call me selfish. Right? Right. Have you ever heard of Sam McConkie? Great name. Irish name, of course. Sam McConkie. Well, Sam, these days, is at the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. He's a bit mad, is Sam. You'll know that the Irish government's scientific advisors, of which Sam McConkie is one, they wanted Ireland to go into full lockdown for 1 month. Level 5, they call it. But the Irish government, the coalition government, is for the moment keeping it at level 3. It's still bad, of course, for people and people's futures. So this guy from the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland, the RCSI, was on the BBC this morning with Victoria Derbyshire, explaining himself, explaining why he believes the government is wrong, why we should go back in Ireland, why the Irish government should go back to full lockdown level 5. Sam McConkie.
My view is many of us in Europe, including in England and Scotland and Ireland, should follow the example of the Pacific Rim in Asia, where big countries like Australia, New Zealand, South Korea and China have actually controlled this completely and suppressed transmission of COVID-19 completely, and then been able to open up their businesses, their restaurants, their social life to a very large extent. But of course, keeping control of immigration and control of incoming travellers very, very rigid in a strict quarantine for 14 days. So I believe that's the model until we get some other alternative, small molecules or vaccines.
Small molecules or vaccines, he said. She had asked him, do you think we should, well, the Irish should go back to level 5? So he's kind of mumbling around about what they did in Asia, and we need to do a bit more until we get the vaccine. So she presses him on it, do you think Ireland should go back to level five?
So you don't agree with level three restrictions. Five is the maximum. Do you think it should be five?
What level three will do, it'll more or less keep us where we're at, yeah, which is many hundreds of cases per day with hospitalizations, ICU and deaths and some outbreaks. If we want to really bring it down and control it and get down to a what I would call a civilized life again, then we need to really control all transmission of COVID-19 on our island. Because we are island nations, we have the ability to do this, as has, as I said, Australia, New Zealand, even places like Orkneys, Faroes, Guernsey, Isle of Man have all controlled this exceptionally well.
So just so I'm clear, sorry to interrupt, Sam McConkie. Just
stop waffling on, Sam.
Just so I'm clear, do you think Ireland should go back to a national lockdown that we saw earlier this year for a period of time?
Yes.
This guy is mad.
More restrictive measures, which...
More restrictive measures.
At level five, it allows us to go 5 kilometres. It keeps schools open. So this lockdown word, Victoria, unfortunately, is very ambiguous because it's used to mean different things in different countries. So I think we have to move away from this idea of lockdown. It's too binary and simplistic. We've a very clearly laid out...
Let's lock down the country, but let's stop using the term lockdown because of its negative connotations. You heard him say that. I'm not going to rewind it.
At level five, and it allows takeaway food. It allows schools to continue, colleges to continue. But so it's not. So lockdown is not a useful phrase in my view.
That's a really fair
very
point.
Clearly defined level.
That's a really fair point, said Derbyshire, the journalist who's supposed to be interrogating it.
Level five, and I believe we should be at our level five. Yes.
Level five. Let's just wreck the economy. Whatever's left of it. Let's destroy it. Let's kill hundreds of thousands of people by plunging them into again. Inconceivable, previously inconceivable misery, health problems, a tsunami of health issues brought about by taking their jobs from them, plunging them into poverty. Yeah. Well, anyway, I went looking around to see who Sam McConkie is or was, who he is, what he used to do. He's at the Royal College of Irish Surgeons now, or the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland now. Well, he used to work at the European Vaccine Initiative, the EVI. In fact, he was the chair of the European Vaccine Initiative's Scientific Advisory Committee. Wait till you hear what Sam McConkie said a couple of years ago. He said, and I quote, "Some funders," he said, "have been very generously and very strategically funding malaria vaccines over the last 25 years. The ones I would pick out are the Wellcome Trust, the Gates Foundation, and also the European Union." He's one of Billy's boys. Ah, yeah. It's you between the eyes.
The unpredictable.
That's the surprise, you see.
Surprise, surprise.
He's one of Billy's boys. They all are. They're all Billy's boys. Every one of them. And this was a point I made last night on this programme, speaking to Professor Martin Kulldorff from the Harvard School of Medicine, the epidemiologist. He is the co-author of the Great Barrington Declaration. Do you know that? You should know if you were listening last night. Thousands of scientists and doctors around the world have signed the Great Barrington Declaration. They are asking that we help, properly help, to shield those who are very vulnerable to the virus and to let everybody else out to go back to their normal lives, to build up some sort of herd immunity. He was on with me here last night, Professor Martin Kulldorff, and I asked him, I put this point to him about people with conflicts of interest, people connected to pharmaceutical companies who are also advising governments on what to do. Some of those people who are advising governments, they still have either tenuous or pretty strong connections to pharmaceutical companies, and maybe we should be asking the question, are these people holding on to lockdown because they, you know, they want to sell a lot of vaccines in 2021. That was my point.
Yeah, I think that's the question that you as a journalist can and should ask.
Should ask.
And as a scientist, I will just tell you that if I were receiving money from pharmaceutical companies, I will refrain from advising the government.
Yeah.
And since I am advising the government on various things, I am not accepting money from pharmaceutical companies.
Yes, if I was taking money from pharma, I wouldn't be advising the government because there would be a conflict of interest. Patrick Vallance, as we knew for months, we knew he worked for GSK. Vallance retains £600,000 worth of shares in GSK. My point to Kulldorff was, it's fair, it's not unfair to suggest that Vallance and others, Fauci and others, are advising governments to keep the misery piled on, because people will beg for the vaccine in the new year, or sooner, if Donald Trump has his way. Now, speaking of the Great Barrington Declaration, you heard there from Martin Kulldorff. His co-author of that declaration was, there's three of them, but one of the co-authors is Sunetra Gupta. You've heard her name quite a lot lately. She's an epidemiologist at Oxford University, esteemed. She has a reputation as being one of the great minds in her field. And Sunetra Gupta also believes that we should let everybody else out, basically back to the way they were before March, to get on with their lives if they are not in any danger of dying from COVID. She was debating on Sky News today with Dr. Julian Tang. He's at Leicester University. He's a respiratory sciences expert. Very interesting. Now, as you know, Sunetra Gupta wants to protect the vulnerable, let everyone else out. As I said, we take the risk with the flu every year, she says, because it is a respiratory infection. So let's hear Professor Julian Tang first. He's against letting the healthy go back to normal, because he says the reason we let flu run through society is because we vaccinate the vulnerable. Here he is, Julian Tang.
We prioritise vaccination for those who are vulnerable, the elderly and those with comorbidities, and we even vaccinate school children to prevent transmission to their parents who might be vulnerable and would need shielding as such. But at the moment, we don't have an antiviral like we do for influenza, and we don't have a vaccine like we do for influenza. So my simple question to the team is, how do you propose to actually protect the vulnerable?
You see, Julian Tang saying there, oh, it's all very well to say that we should treat COVID like flu. We have a vaccine for flu. We don't have one for COVID, at least not yet. So what did Sunetra Gupta respond with? What did she say to him in response to that?
Of course, that is very much the critical question. But when it comes to vaccination, vaccines for flu, developing one myself for that very reason, don't actually do a terribly good job of protecting the vulnerable or preventing the transmission of virus to those who are vulnerable. So I think that brings us to a really important question. Several important questions, but one is actually, how do we live with other respiratory infections?
Yes, how do we live with other respiratory infections? But it's very important that we rewind and listen to what she said in response to the flu vaccine.
Vaccines for flu, developing one myself for that very reason, don't actually do a terribly good job of protecting the vulnerable.
They don't do a good job of protecting the vulnerable. People get the flu anyway, particularly people with comorbidities. Because as we know, and you can Google this, you'll get Daily Mail, you'll get The Mirror, you'll get The Guardian. The flu vaccine hardly ever works.
Or preventing the transmission of virus to those who are vulnerable. So,
wow, the vaccine doesn't do very much in preventing transmission of the virus to the very vulnerable. Marvellous. She just goes on again. I won't play the rest of it for you. She goes on to reiterate, we have to live with this thing. It's a respiratory infection. We're only asking that the really vulnerable look after themselves for a couple of months. Let everybody else back out to play. We'll all get it. Most of us have had it anyway. And immunity levels will build up like that. And I promise you, Dr. Julian Tang didn't have much of a counter argument to put to Sunetra Gupta. If you don't believe me, Sky News will of course have that clip, will have the entire debate on its YouTube channel, I have no doubt. It's 22 minutes past the hour. So there you are. So an interesting bit of a furore on Twitter today when I put out that comment about 82. It is true, the average age of persons or a person dying with COVID in the United Kingdom is actually 82. And the average lifespan of a citizen, of a man or woman in the UK, is less than that. Anywhere between 79 and 81. You see? And these are the questions. And while you've got brilliant writers like Alison Pearson in The Telegraph, great writer, very sincere woman, she's desperately doing as much as she can to put the counter point of view to the COVID response. She's doing a great job at The Telegraph. What we need, I think, is for those sceptical journalists who do have these very prestigious seats at the big newspapers. They need now to move on and to start asking why. Why is it happening? It must be occurring to people like Alison and others. It must be occurring to them, well, governments know this. They know that the virus doesn't brush the vast majority of the population. They know this now. They know the damage being done and the damage that will be done to the economy and the implications of that. They know it. So is it a case that we think they're stubborn and they don't want to end up with egg on their faces and basically engage reverse gear? And I suppose that's what most people think. Or is there something else going on? This is a question I've put to several doctors lately on the programme. And many of them seem to think there is something else going on. One of the things they want to do is to coerce us into taking a vaccine that we don't need. 24 minutes past the hour. This is Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Piers Corbyn will join me in the second hour. Big news, he is taking the Metropolitan Police to court. And we'll talk to him about that. You know that Piers was issued with a £10,000 fine for breaching COVID regulations. He was speaking lately around the country, Westminster. He was at Westminster, of course. He was in Trafalgar Square. He's been in Sheffield. He was arrested several times. We'll get into that with him. Before that, though, in a couple of minutes' time, I'll be joined by James Dellingpole. And I'm looking forward to that. Had a chat with James today. Seems like a lovely bloke. Very successful journalist and author. And the Delling Pod is a much-loved podcast, which you can hear. Basically, you'll get it from your regular podcast provider. His website is dellingpoleworld.com. And he's not happy with what is going on. And we'll get his take on it in a few moments. Now, it was announced yesterday that Eddie Van Halen passed away, the great guitar player and co-founder of the hard rock group. You could say soft metal. You could say whatever you want, Van Halen. And I wouldn't claim to be the biggest fan of all time. But there are songs that come along, especially when you're younger, that really grab you, that you'll never forget where you were when you heard it for the first time. And when I heard, I could do the cliched thing now and find an obscure Van Halen song and try to act like I know my stuff. I don't know my stuff. So I'm going to play Jump. I'll never forget, as long as I live, where I was when I heard Jump. I was 10 years old. I was living in Ballybeg in Waterford. It was in the summer and I heard it on the radio for the first time from the album 1984, and it was mind blown. And I couldn't wait to get a blank tape and wait for hours for the track to be played again on the radio station so that I could record it and play it over and over and over again. Life-changing for me. Amazing track. This is Van Halen and Jump. When we come back from this, I'll be joined by James Dellingpole. You don't want to miss that. Wednesday's Richie Allen Show. It is October 7th, 2020. The BBG, not the BBC. Broadcasting live from Salford in Greater Manchester. You are very welcome to your programme. Van Halen on the Richie Allen Radio Show, 29 minutes past 5, Salford. The streets are quiet in Salford, no drive time anymore. Keep the tweets coming in, it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Huge interest, lots of interest in my first guest today. Thrilled that he agreed to come on. Finally, you know all about his podcast, The Delling Pod. I mentioned it earlier on. You can get it, if you haven't heard it, I'm sure you have, from your regular podcast provider. He's an award-winning journalist and author, and he's written for pretty much every newspaper you can think of and some that you haven't. So let's welcome him to the programme, the one and only James Dellingpole. James, thanks for coming on. How are you?
Oh, Richie, I'm delighted to be on your show. And you mustn't worry about me. You were kind of hinting that it was a dangerous thing coming on your show. I don't think it's a dangerous thing, is it?
No, it isn't. No, I said this to you earlier on because this program sometimes makes the press, not necessarily for anything that I might have said to cause anybody any offence, but sometimes people come on with very extreme opinions about things and I argue with them and debate them, as it used to be. And sometimes my guests do get questioned later on as to why did you go on that program and stuff like that. But no, I suppose those are
that's
the
terrible
times we live in. It's not great, is it? but that's where we are.
No, it's a symptom of our terrible times, that this whole guilt by association thing. I'm old enough to remember an era, and it really wasn't so long ago, when if you interviewed, say, Colonel Gaddafi, it did not mean that you were endorsing his policies in Libya, or if you were interviewed Idi Amin, it did not mean that you wanted to feed your enemies to the crocodiles.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was understood that journalists had a job, and the job was to find out what people thought, regardless. You know, if you got an Adolf Hitler interview, not that you would have done, but I mean, had you been around in the 1930s and you got a Hitler interview, it wouldn't have meant that you were necessarily endorsing Nazism. What's happened to our world that we don't understand this anymore?
Well, you're the best man to ask that question, because you've had a very distinguished, well, you've had, I shouldn't use the past tense, you have a very distinguished career. You've kind of straddled that time frame, that time period. What do you think has happened to bring about this paradigm shift?
I think it has been a long time coming. You know, we can talk about cultural Marxism, we can talk about the Frankfurt School, we can talk about the long march through the institutions, the way that the left has colonized every major institution from Hollywood, obviously the BBC, most the mainstream media, everything. And I think that while the left was doing its work, the rest of us were just sleeping, or we were trying to persuade ourselves that it wasn't really a problem, that once people grew out of that early phase when their frontal lobes haven't formed properly and they think the left has the answer to everything and the only problem with communism is it hasn't been tried properly yet.
Yeah.
Once we got over that stage of our lives, we'd all grow up and get mortgages and have families and understand that we were natural conservatives. Well, this ain't happened anymore, not least because of what happened, I think, in the with the 2008 crash, that capitalism got a bad rap. And what people didn't realize is that it wasn't really capitalism that had failed. It was crony capitalism. It was too big to fail businesses being propped up by the government. So I think that that people have a very, very misguided impression of what it is that free markets are about, what capitalism is, what freedom is. People have been victim of a dumbed down education system. I mean, there's no question that successive generations have emerged more stupid than their predecessors, which doesn't really help, does it? So you're working with a diminishing talent pool, diminishing IQ pool. I think we are approaching end of civilization times. You know how civilizations rise and fall. I think we are approaching the last days of the Roman Empire.
That's amazing. Now, I want to go back to you talking about the left, because there was a seismic shift in the thinking and the behaviour of people on the left. I read you a lot. I do. I'm not being sycophantic. I do read you a lot. And I watch your podcast when I can. And it's the Delling Pod, folks, by the way. If you haven't heard of it, I'm sure you have. Check it out. It's excellent. But one of the things that maybe is being overlooked here is, think back to, I suppose, the more prevalent left-wing minds and speakers of the 70s and 80s and trade unionists and people like that. It occurs to me that many of those people have or had even the same concerns that you're expressing now. And this is an interesting thing. A lot of my listeners say this to me all the time. They say, Rich, you're a bit of a socialist. And I am, James. My heroes would be people like Salvador Allende and Bolivar. And you can punch me in the mouth for saying that if you want. We can argue about that another day. But those people and those those leaders, they wouldn't have countenanced some of the things that are happening today. You know, the cancel culture. What's happened? So there has been some shift. Yeah.
I was thinking about the other day. I was thinking, get this. I was thinking warm thoughts about Tony Benn.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure that Tony Benn would have put up with this nonsense.
No.
I think he would have been appalled by the way that Parliament is now, sorry, the government is now ruling by decree, that government policy is not being held to account by Parliament. I think that old school left would not have let this stuff happen. I think this is a recent phenomenon. I think it's a sign. I mean, by the way, just a brief parenthesis. I don't think that the terms left and right quite the same meaning that they used to. I think that the divisions between in our culture are not so easily categorized as left or right. I suspect that you and I probably agree on more than we disagree.
No doubt.
I think that, I know that every generation thinks that its politicians are pygmies compared to the previous generations, and that the golden age is long past, and you read the letters written by Romans complaining about how all the good times have gone, and now their children just don't have the same values. So every generation feels this. Nevertheless, I do look at the crop in government right now, and I think, well, you are so low grade. I mean, starting with Boris Johnson, of course, he's just absolutely. I thought David Cameron was a pretty poor prime minister. I thought Theresa May was pretty poor, but Boris has said, "Hold my beer." He's way worse than those.
Why? Why is he? What has happened? How do you end up with a conservative politician deciding to crash the economy and keep people locked in their homes for months based on the notion that we need to protect ourselves from a respiratory infection, even if it is a pretty virulent one? How does a conservative politician end up in that situation?
Well, we can attempt to answer that later on, but let me first answer the question you were going to ask me before I kind of interrupted you right at the beginning. I know you were going to ask me to assess what's going on in the world at the moment, looking around and looking at this craziness. I'll give you an example of just, there are so many examples of the craziness. I mean, you saw that awful, so saddening footage of an elderly lady attending the cremation of her husband.
Yeah.
And there was video footage of this, and all the chairs had been spaced out for 2 meters, and her son pulled his chair closer to hers so that he could comfort her. And, you know, he was breaking the crematorium rules. I mean, how can we have got a world where you're not supposed to comfort your mother as her husband is being cremated? It is just bizarre. I'll give you another example. My kids are both at a university in the north of the country, and I went to visit them the other day. And they told me how just before 10 o'clock every night, the police start patrolling the streets, cruising for students who are mingling with people who are not in their house groups, or who are breaking the rule of six, or who are, in other words, just behaving like normal students would. They have to do their lectures. The lectures are all online now. So what is the point of being at university at all if you can't mingle with people of your own age group, if you can't actually see your lecturers except on a screen? It seems to me that the government wants it both ways. It's massively expanded, thanks to Tony Blair, who was, I mean, probably the worst prime minister ever, before Boris Johnson anyway.
Yeah.
Tony Blair massively expanded the education sector as a kind of racket, I think, to rip off parents with their 9,000 a year fees, and to rip off Chinese people coming in to take advantage of this so-called supposed gold standard education system, which is nothing of the kind. I mean, these are all just kind of Mickey Mouse degrees they're getting, really. They're not really worth anything. I'm included in that gullible category because I'm a typical middle class parent who still cleaves to that old school view that, you know, you need a spell of higher education before you go out into the world. And so here are our kids wasting all this money for an experience so joyless and so pointless that they might as well have just stayed at home or gone and got a job in a pub or somewhere. Well, except that would have been no good either, because that they wouldn't get any work right now.
Yeah.
I think that the destruction of our culture in the space of, what, 9 months has been, I mean, it's been quite the bizarrest experience of my lifetime. And I don't know whether you or your listeners feel the same way as I do, but I found in the past, I've looked at current affairs, I've looked at the bad things that are going on in the world, And however bad they are, they've never been as big a worry as the kind of quotidian concerns of my private life. You know, whether I've got, you know, I don't know, I've got a bad stomach, or whether I've got work worries or relationship worries. You know, all the, I think generally one's personal life causes one more grief than outside world. But now I wake up every morning and what's going on in the world is far, far more worrying than anything that's going on in my private life. And that, I think, is a bad sign that we are living in very, very, very troubled times. I mean, probably the last time anyone experienced this was in the Second World War, wasn't it? I mean, then you'd have looked across at events, particularly in the early years of the war, and you'd have thought, oh, my God, we are stuffed. Hitler's winning this one. It's really frightening. We could be invaded at any moment. And it was that German parachute I can see landing in my garden. That was probably the last time anyone in this country had this horrible experience where external affairs were more worrying than your domestic life. And it's not a good thing.
The James Delling poll is our guest, by the way. James is going to stay with us till the top of the hour, and good to have him on the programme today. The Delling Pod is the podcast and hugely successful. DellingPoolWorld.com. DellingPoolWorld.com is where you'll read all about James, if indeed it is the unlikely case. But if you haven't heard of James before, check him out. I didn't bring you on here to throw conspiracy theories at you. It's not what I do. I don't do that. I don't know the answers. I have no answers. What I can't get my head around is, it would appear, and I interviewed last night, at this time last night, I interviewed one of the co-authors of the Great Barrington Declaration, a professor of epidemiology at Harvard University, was on the show last night. His name is Martin Kulldorff. He's co-authored a declaration with, among others, Sunetra Gupta from Oxford University. They want to let healthy people and people not in any danger of dying from COVID to go back to the way things were before March and to look after the vulnerable. And I suppose my question is, I believe that whatever Boris Johnson and his cabinet is being told, I believe that they know that COVID, however infectious it might be, has been vastly or greatly over-exaggerated and is going to do, the lockdown itself is going to do unimaginable damage. My question is, and this is all speculation, why do they continue to go along with it and to come to the lectern once a week or once every 2 weeks to say, we need to go further, we need to go further? That is what I don't understand. And it must be keeping you up nights as well, James, by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I would say that in the case of Matt Hancock, he actually genuinely believes this shit because he has a messiah complex. He's just like, he's a man of very little talent who's been overpromoted, and he's got this power and it's gone to his head, and he is genuinely not interested in listening to any of the counter arguments. I would say that he is the exception rather than the rule within the parliamentary party. I think a lot of the MPs know it's absolute rubbish, and yet are trying to sort of find a way to rebel it against it, but they haven't done a very good job of it so far. I think that you talked about conspiracy. I mean, you don't need to be a conspiracy theorist to know what's going on, because if it is a conspiracy, it's a conspiracy in plain sight. Why are so many governments, apart from a few notable exceptions like Sweden, Brazil, Belarus of all places, why are most of the countries in the world acting in lockstep? It's because actually, when you look at it, elected politicians don't have much power anymore, or rather they don't have much independence. They basically go along with what the system, the sort of the global system, the new world order, if you like, tells them to do. So you've got really Britain's policy is being dictated not by ultimately by Boris Johnson or even Matt Hancock. It's being dictated by the World Health Organization, by the World Economic Forum, you know, the WEF, which is Davos. And I think that is the bigger problem. We are that coronavirus is being used as the pretext for advancing Agenda 2030, the UN's massive campaign to impose a kind of a technocratic new world order, which incorporates things like sustainability, social justice, all the preoccupations of the modern left. And it's going to reduce the sovereignty of individual nation states. It's going to increase the power of unelected technocrats in much the same way as the European Union operates. So this is the kind of globalist new world order which is being imposed on us in the guise of protecting our health and safety. And it disappoints me, I have to say, seeing how few people in this country and indeed across the world are wise to this what's going on. It amazes me how compliant people are with their muzzles. I think we have a moral duty here to resist this anti-democratic imposition on our freedoms. Our lives are being stolen away from us. Our freedoms are being stolen away from us in the name of what is essentially a non-existent problem. And yes, I understand that if you have coronavirus and you have various underlying health problems and you're very elderly, then yes, it could be pretty rough for you. It could indeed be fatal. But there are lots of diseases like that. There are lots of viral problems which have similar effects on people. Viruses generally cull. They burn the dead wood, if you like, the dry tinder. Every year there are there's a percentage of the population which is in death's waiting room. Yeah. And all these viruses do is finish the job. That's not callous. That's just a simple fact of life. And we've all got to go in the end. Even you and I will eventually be assumed to the heavens, I'm sure. And it'll all be very sad when it happens. But, no one gets out of here alive.
We can have a nuanced conversation on the radio here today. Problem is, most conversations happen on social media. And you end up dealing with, playing the man, not the ball, ad hominem attacks. Because James Dellingpole is obviously a heartless bastard who doesn't care about the elderly, which is nonsense, because James Dellingpole has or had parents and grandparents. So, of course, you do. But this is one of the problems we have. I want to play you a tiny bit of audio, a very tiny bit. It is the Harvard professor of epidemiology, Martin Kulldorff, who's getting a lot of press today. It's me asking him last night, don't panic now. I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm not. I never have been. I think there are too many vaccines. And I think there's a cavalier attitude towards vaccine safety. I'm pro-safe medicine. I'm not anti-vaccine at all. But I asked Martin Kulldorff last night, is he concerned that a lot of those advising the governments, and you made a very good point about lockstep, how every government is doing the same thing at the same time. I asked him, was he concerned that many of these advisors do have fairly strong links to pharmaceutical companies? Because one of the things I believe is going to happen is we're going to be coerced, not compelled, I don't think, not yet anyway, but coerced into taking a vaccine. Just have a listen to this. It's only 35 seconds, James. It's an interesting little clip. I'd like to get your opinion on it. Here is, it's me posing a question to Martin Kulldorff yesterday. Some of those people who are advising governments, they still have either tenuous or pretty strong connections to pharmaceutical companies. And maybe we should be asking the question, are these people holding on to lockdown because they want to sell a lot of vaccines in 2021? That was my point.
Yeah, I think that's the question that you as a journalist can and should ask. And as a scientist, I will just tell you that if I were receiving money from pharmaceutical companies, I will refrain from advising the government.
Yeah.
And since I am advising the government on various things, I am not accepting money from pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, and your former parish, The Telegraph, was good enough to make the point that Patrick Vallance still has a very healthy shareholding in GSK Glaxo. And these people, I think, there's an argument to be made, I could be wrong, but it looks like they're making things very uncomfortable to make a killing in the vaccine market very soon. And of course, there are issues with how quickly the vaccine will come out. But there's also civil liberty issues, James. I'd like to not take the vaccine, but I'd also like my life to be allowed to carry on, even if I don't take it. I wouldn't like to be told, you can't go to watch the rugby union with James Dellingpole. You can't go and watch Salford City play soccer. I can't believe I'm talking about these things, to be honest.
I can't believe we're talking about any of these things. I think that this world is unreal. It's like a really, really bad acid trip. I mean, worse than any acid trip I've ever had. And I've had some bad ones. Well, I had one bad one. This is definitely worse. Definitely worse. I mean, in my bad acid trip, a man on the end of the cigarette stole my soul. But this is like, he's now stolen the world's soul. I mean, this is just this is insane. Yeah. Patrick Balance has, as I understand it, a £600,000 shareholding in GlaxoSmithKline, something like that. I don't see how, in all conscience, he can be advising on government policy when he would stand to benefit enormously by if the government goes all out for a vaccine, which it seems to be doing. I think he should recuse himself from decisions related to that. I mean, I think really he shouldn't be having the job, or he should have liquidated his shareholding before he took on the job. It seems to me really, really immoral, this, and I'm surprised that there hasn't been more fuss about this. What is this man doing advising the government?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you don't like to be, as a presenter, you don't like to be telling people, I don't mean guests, but I don't like to be telling the audience, this is the way it is. I don't like to do that. Try and avoid it as best as you can. But the only conclusion I can draw, particularly because some of these people are dotted around other governments, Fauci, of course, in America, it's like, make things increasingly annoying and unbearable so that eventually people will beg for the passport. I mean, you mentioned earlier on, we could spend all day on it. It's a technocratic move. Agenda 2030. I mean, I'm really impressed, and it's not in any way to patronise you, that you're talking about this, because it's not a comfortable subject for a lot of people like you who've worked in what we call mainstream media at the top level for many years to be discussing. But I see that going that way as well. This paradigm that they want us to exist in the near future. And I mean, to your credit, you do talk about it. I mean, do you worry about the personal consequences of talking about stuff like that, James, or is it just, well, damn it, this is too serious, I've got to talk about it?
I've gone past the stage, Richie, where I really care whether people think I'm tinfoil hat or not. I tell it like it is. I speak the truth. I mean, I think that, do you know, there are so many reasons why this bad stuff is happening right now. And one of them definitely is that it's been a long time since journalists have done their job properly. I mean, look at who's been calling out this. You can almost count on the fingers of one hand the number of prominent journalists who've been calling out this nonsense from the start. I mean, there's a few names you come to mind. Peter Hitchens, obviously.
Yeah.
Toby Young's been doing a great job. You know, a few of them, but it's amazing how even quite sort of distinguished journalists known for their integrity have just failed to call this one out, particularly with regard to the WEF and Agenda 2030. And the reason for that, I think, is partly ignorance, and partly possibly because it's considered to be, you know, a bit out there.
Yeah.
But I think mainly it's ignorance. I was talking to, I can't mention his name, but I was shooting at the weekend with a very interesting crowd of people, and I mentioned to this one senior journalist about Agenda 2030 and about the WEF and about the Great Reset, and she didn't know anything about it.
Yeah,
I mean, that I found that extraordinary. The Great Reset is real. Look at who's using the phrase the Great Reset. Prince Charles, our future king, unfortunately, is using the phrase. Boris is using the phrase build back better. Do you know what build back better is? Build back better is the code phrase of the Great Reset. I think it's a UN-driven phrase, which has been, you can trace it back. It's not a slogan that Boris has invented. It's a slogan that he has absorbed. Boris has been captured, I would say, by the globalists. And I don't want to sound like, you know, it is very sinister, but this is not a fringe position. It's not David Icke who's saying this. There is more than enough evidence to demonstrate. I've written about it. Build back better is a code phrase being used by the UN to advance its Agenda 2030.
Yeah.
It's and you'll see leaders from all over the world doing it. The reason I know this stuff, the reason I'm probably ahead of most of my colleagues in the Fourth Estate, is that I wrote a book a few years ago called Watermelons, and Watermelons was about the green movement and why it's, you know, what I set out to answer was the difficult question is, if climate change is a massive hoax, is that too strong a word? Certainly, it's been massively exaggerated by the political and media class. So why has climate change been exaggerated by the political, media and scientific class? Why has it been presented to us as this major existential threat when it is nothing of the kind? And why have so many people bought into this? Well, you look into it and you realize that for a long time, various people in organizations like the UN and the EU have been pushing this agenda. It used to be called sustainability, then it became Agenda 21, then it became Agenda 2030. And it is all the same thing. It is all about a globalist takeover. This is not conspiracy theory. No, this is conspiracy fact. There is so much evidence to show this is what they believe. This is what they want. They don't like the world as it was before. They want it. They don't want us to have our freedoms. They want to end Western industrial civilization.
Hey, James, can I put a word in for David Icke? Yeah. I know David. And I think if David had never said that the Queen is a lizard or that reptilian races, interdimensional races, I think maybe a lot of people would pay attention to him. I mean, I've got Jewish friends. They think that David is anti-Semitic, and they still think that when David said lizards, he meant Jews. But I know he didn't. David gave a really interesting interview with Eamon Holmes on Talk Radio last year, where Eamon gave him a bit of time. And he was very lucid and very interesting. And I've looked at some of his books over the years. To give him a little bit of credit, and I know you're not trying to take him down, if he had never said those things about the Queen and stuff, a lot of people, more people would probably know some of the stuff he's written about, because for a long time now, he's written that he sees the world going this way, chapter and verse. I mean, he's basically, you know, mined the documents, the various think tanks, the forums you mentioned. And I don't feel I have to defend him at all. You know, he's a big boy and he said some things over the years that are very questionable. But he has, to his credit, called a lot of this over the years, you know. That's all I would say.
Totally. No. I'm not going to diss him. I've got no personal experience of him. I know that he is right on a lot of issues. I think probably right that he has slightly reduced his credibility with some of the things he said elsewhere, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
The same, I think, is probably true of, or rather, another source of accurate but sort of seemingly conspiracy theory information is UK Column. I think they've been on the ball, and it's amazing how these truth tellers have been marginalized by our mainstream media, which seems to me to have drifted left. I mean, you know, I used to be very mainstream. Well, I mean, or rather, I used to be considered more mainstream than I am now. And it's not me that's changed. I say the things I always did, but the media has definitely drifted left. It's drifted more kind of globalist establishment. You only have to look at the way that the newspapers have promulgated this scare, doing the government's bidding. So, you know, remember, back in the day, our tabloid press was known for its fearlessness and its frankness. That ship sailed a long time ago.
It did. You mentioned the UK Column. Again, just to play devil's advocate, I would take interest in a lot of stuff that they would do in terms of putting the stuff together, you know, the documentation and stuff. But again, I mean, you mentioned David and the Queen is a lizard. These people pushed, well, one of them very strongly pushed a ludicrous conspiracy theory about babies being eaten at a school in Hampstead. And they pushed it despite knowing it was nonsense. And also last year, they pushed some crazy story about people getting sick at Glastonbury because of 5G, which was nonsense, and they knew it was nonsense. And they kind of score own goals. These people could be very useful.
Yes.
But they score these own goals, and you wonder, like, why did you lie about that? Why did you? And maybe it's because it's clickbait and because it draws attention to them. But that's the reason I don't use these people. I get asked all the time, oh, you should use these people on the South Coast. And I say, well, I can't. Because, you know, when you knowingly state something that you know to be untrue, and it's a shame because I will accept that they would have done a lot of very good programs with very interesting information. But you know yourself in journalism, James, you're not forgiven. You never get forgiven. If you put some information in the public domain that you know to be questionable, you know that you'll not recover that, maybe forever. It's a difficult thing. You've never done it, to your credit.
That's true. And also, I think also there's a lot of people that would like to discredit people like me using that kind of underhand method of saying, well, you know, you're a climate change denier. That means that nothing you say can be taken seriously. It's a way of closing down the arguments being proffered by people who are maybe on the money, but you know, you don't want their message to get out. So you accuse them of this or that. So yeah, I've experienced that a bit. Although
More than a bit. You've been hammered. I mean, when I first got in touch with you a few weeks ago, and I said you must come on. You're obviously very busy, and you know, obviously, I knew. As I said, I'm not lying. I knew your podcast. It's hugely popular. It's one of the most popular podcasts on the web, the Delling Pod, and it gets huge numbers on YouTube. It gets huge numbers on the various podcast providers. So looking into you, I see the stick, and that's a dangerous thing as well. That's becoming so common now. The attempts to use social media, especially Twitter, to try and wreck somebody. I mean, we could have spent time on that, to try and ruin somebody's life because you don't like an opinion. I was appalled to see Peter Tatchell on Twitter yesterday with a triumphalist post saying, oh, we at the Peter Tatchell Foundation are proud to announce that we got some dude fired from The Guardian, some cartoonist who is originally from Poland, because he's allegedly homophobic and racist. I couldn't believe it. I thought, Jesus, what happened?
Yes.
What happened to the days when, Peter, you would have went on a TV show with the guy and you would have banged away at each other for 20 minutes and had a good row? Now you want to destroy the guy. You've had that. I've seen that. And it's difficult to take. And
yes.
Yeah.
It's so sad, isn't it? Because Peter Tatchell's done some very brave
great
things
stuff
in his life.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience with George Galloway. You know, George Galloway, he's slightly to the left of me, I'd say. And I've done a radio show with him, and he was fantastic. He was just one of the best. He's fluent, he's funny, he's sharp. But we have a mutual friend who was trying to get us together and trying to get him on the podcast. And I was more than up for that until one day I tweeted something disobliging about Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah.
And there was George Galloway trying to get me cancelled, trying to get me deleted off Twitter.
Wow. Now,
I was gobsmacked.
What did you say? What did you say?
George Galloway.
What did you say, James? It must have been bad.
No,
probably not.
It wasn't even particularly bad. It was just, I genuinely can't remember what it was. The thing is, Richie, I found that the only way to survive this stuff is really not to give a shit.
Laugh.
You've got to develop a thick skin. And what you mustn't ever do, ever, ever, I mean, there's one thing, never, ever, ever apologize to these bastards. Never, never concede weakness to them. This is what I said to my very good friend, Toby Young. Toby, poor old Tobes, gets the most
hammered.
Tremendous
he gets hammered.
Stick.
He does.
Absolutely. He gets hammered so much that I feel like, you know, slightly envious of him, actually, because of all the attention he gets.
Yeah.
But when he lost his various government, he had these really tiny jobs on government quangos. It was insulting for a man of his talents that he was being offered such a poor position. But when it all happened, he was all contrite, you know, and like he'd almost done something wrong, and he hadn't done anything wrong. You should never show any form of contrition, because these people are evil. They're not interested in the truth. They're not interested in giving people a fair hearing. They just want to destroy anyone who disagrees with them.
Final question for today. Thanks for giving us your time today. I really appreciate that, James.
Ah, pleasure.
I will just give a plug again. Dellingpoolworld.com is the website, of course. The Delling Pod is the podcast itself. Your podcast provider will give it to you. It's on YouTube. And if you're on Twitter, look for James Dellingpool. There is only one, obviously. And do follow James there. 2 minutes left. Is the glass half full, or are we going to somehow turn this around? And if so, what do we need to do?
I think, oh, Richie, I really worry that we're toast. I don't know how we can claw this one back. I think the first thing that's got to happen, the first sign that things are turning is if Trump wins. Donald Trump has got to win the next election. Otherwise, who's going to lead us? Who's going to lead us out of this mess? Donald Trump, it was very interesting the position he took when he got coronavirus. And he tried to send a signal out to the world. Hang on a second. We have overreacted to this thing. Look at me. I'm getting on a bit. I am overweight. I'm in an at-risk category. I survived. You can too. I think we should get over this thing and move on. Whereas the Democrats are all like, yeah, we need more lockdowns. We need more masks, all this crazy, crazy stuff. I think that whatever you think of Trump, he is the voice of sanity in a world that has gone completely mad. So that's the first thing. No hope from Boris. I mean, we've got to get rid of him. He's hopeless. I don't know who we've got who replace him, because as I said before, the talent pool is so small. But yeah, I'm quite pessimistic, I have to say, mate.
I won't editorialise the Trump thing because of my own leanings. You won't be surprised to learn that I wouldn't be his biggest fan, but I won't editorialise that because I've said a lot about him. But I'm going to agree with positive enough his approach to having COVID, and maybe he's signalling, maybe he's messaging his base and everybody else and saying, listen, don't take this thing too seriously. And if that's right, well, that's no bad thing. James, thanks for your time. Folks, if you haven't come across James, I've already mentioned it, I'll mention it again. The Delling Pod is the podcast. From your podcast provider, you'll find it easily enough. iTunes, of course, the usual. And it's on Spotify as well, YouTube, and DellingPoolWorld.com. Pleasure to have you on, James. Really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
It's been a joy. I hope you'll have me back one day.
Anytime you want. Don't wait to be asked. Cheers, James. That was lovely. James Dellingpool there, live on the line from his home. And I mean this, if you haven't checked out his podcast before, do check it out and do follow him on Twitter. It's James Dellingpool. There's only one. You'll find him on Twitter easily enough. It is 8 minutes past the hour. A lot of comments on that. Thank you. Scottish John says, Trump, the voice of sanity. He doesn't agree with James there. Interesting that those videos he made, hospital and stuff, and that thing he was saying about not taking COVID so seriously. You have to wonder, you know. I've always been, and I said I wouldn't editorialise, I don't want to editorialise, but I've always been of the impression that Trump is fairly genuine in terms of that, as far as Trump is concerned, Trump is, as far as he's concerned, he's real and he's in charge and shooting from the hip. I don't believe that's the case, but as far as he's concerned, he might believe that. And good. A lot of Q stuff around today. I got a bit of flack for seemingly being dismissive of Q. That's Q and on, of course. I just want to say, because it's worth saying, I have spoken with people over the years on this programme about paedophile rings, about satanic paedophilia, and I take it very seriously. And before many people were talking about satanic paedophilia, I was doing it on the airwaves of Talk Radio Europe a long time ago. So I don't dismiss that notion that paedophile rings operate and that they are prominent. I don't dismiss that at all. What I dismiss is the notion that Donald Trump is a light warrior consciously engaged in a battle to the death with satanic paedophiles, and that there'll be a rapture or a storm. I think that's horse shit, personally. That's my opinion. But I do not agree that Facebook should have any right to go around deleting groups and deleting pages because people discuss it. I am a proponent of free speech, and I always will be. And I'm not lecturing you here now. I reserve the right to laugh at the notion that Donald is a light warrior. I reserve that right. But I absolutely endorse your right to believe it. Absolutely right. And if you do, you should be allowed to discuss it. I don't endorse the deletion. It's the reason I put that post up earlier on. It's becoming a plague now. People being deleted to protect others from harm. We've got to take down QAnon groups all over Facebook. Why is the question? And Facebook says, because they're dangerous. To who? The answer is they're not dangerous to anybody. No more than discussing the assassination of JFK. I know it's a bad comparison. I know it is. Discussing 9/11. Discussing climate change. It's not harmful to anybody. But of course, if you agree that the Q Facebook pages should be deleted, which I don't. But if you do, and if it is allowed to happen before too long, pages that discuss vaccine safety, which is hugely important, pages which discuss false flag terror, climate change, it won't be long before those pages are deleted. And of course, that is what is meant to happen, in my opinion. It is 11 and a half minutes past the hour. I will be joined in a couple of minutes' time by none other than the great Piers Corbyn. He's taking the police, the Metropolitan Police, to court. He really is. He'll tell us about that in a moment. Keep those comments coming in at Richie Allen Show on Twitter.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, so we'll get Piers on then. We're going to stick with the Eddie Van Halen theme then, right? So the obvious way to go is to play this by Michael Jackson from the album Thriller. And you'll be well aware, of course, that this song was elevated by the amazing guitar solo of Edward Van Halen. This is Beat It on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford here in Greater Manchester. Hour 2, Piers Corbyn joins us live from London in a few minutes' time. Don't miss him. Right, Eddie Van Halen providing the guitar solo for Michael Jackson, 1983, I think, Beat It on the Richie Allen Radio Show. 16 and a half minutes past 6 o'clock this Wednesday. Yeah, I had to think there. Wednesday, it is the 7th of October, 2020. He doesn't need a preamble. A household name these days. Let's welcome back to the programme the physicist, the meteorologist, and the human rights campaigner, the one and only Piers Corbyn. Piers, thanks for coming back, mate. Always a pleasure.
How did you do?
I'm not too bad
at
all.
Fantastic to be here, as always.
Well, thanks for coming on today. I really, really interesting and important news in terms of the impact it might have in the near future. But having had all of the trouble you had at the various lockdown protests around the country, of course, Trafalgar Square, Sheffield, being arrested, being issued with a £10,000 fine, you've decided to take the fight to the police in this country. Tell us about that. What's happening?
That's right. We're taking civil action against the police and suing them for damages for wrongful arrest, unlawful detention and assault on the two arrests one in August the 29th at Trafalgar Square, and then the following week in Sheffield, September the 5th.
Brilliant. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, we decided to do that because the police have to be taught a lesson. And of course, if we manage to establish a precedent on that, because they were using the COVID regulations, if you like, as a cover to justify their attacks, which were unjustified in other terms as well. We decided to do that to, attack them or get them off our backs and set a precedent which will affect others, because there were more arrests and attacks physically on people on the 26th of September, as well as some on the 19th. So anyone will benefit if we succeed on this.
I wasn't there now, and at any of these. The reason being, I'm basically trapped here in Manchester. I can't travel very far. One of the main reasons why I wasn't, just because they're not here, and this is not my opinion now, but when police have commented on the protests, they've claimed that some of the anti-lockdown protesters became violent, that the violence that we saw, the clashes that we saw on UK television news, that was initiated by protesters who were asked to socially distance, were asked to disperse, but refused to do it. That's what they're saying. Now, I know that doesn't mean anything to your own personal case, but they're saying if things got out of hand, it's not us, they're saying.
Well, they would say that, wouldn't they? But specifically, the case on the 26th, which was the biggest rally that's ever happened in Trafalgar Square this century. The Iraq War one, for example, would not have been in Trafalgar Square.
Yeah.
But it was the biggest rally of a century. We did it in conjunction with a risk analysis, where we said if there's any problems arising and people are, you know, will be keeping as distant as they can. But it's not up to the organisers to enforce things more than give advice. And have St John's Ambulance nearby and stuff like that. And we did all that. And when the police asked us, this is the local liaison police, to make announcements, we did.
Have we lost, Piers?
And there wasn't any problem. We had 3 hours of this rally, and there was... No, the police said, OK. And then they started complaining that people were too close together. We said, well, we can't do anything about that. People have done it, and they know what they've been advised. But they went on complaining about that, despite announcements. And then at 13 minutes before the end of the event, because we were ending, we had the last speaker coming up, we were going to then march, or did march, in fact, to Hyde Park. But they moved in with the TSG, Territorial Support Group, 13 minutes before the end. Now, of course, there was no need for that at all. They could have just waited that time, and then we would have gone anyway, and through a march, people socially dispersed. So the point about the whole thing about social distancing is a cover for attacks when they want to. And they wanted to, because they can then say, Sadiq Khan had said that you people are spreading contagion, so these demonstrations shouldn't be allowed. And therefore they wanted to attack us violently to make it look as if violence would happen on these and try and discourage other people from coming.
There was
that
a very
was all it was about.
There was a
I
very
the TSG who came in, not the liaison police.
Yeah.
I think the liaison police were actually quite taken aback by what happened.
And maybe it's important for you to just reiterate about this TSG, because that's a kind of a sinister development, isn't it?
It is. Yes, it's a very sinister development of the TSG use for this. The TSG is Terrorist Oil Support Group. It's meant to be an anti-terrorist thing. They're heavies. And when, you know, the idea of modern policing is they're meant to explain and, you know, do this and that before they engage. Well, these guys came in with truncheons. Their idea of explanation or initial engagement, rather, is hitting somebody with a truncheon. And that is totally unacceptable.
And when you were first arrested, Piers?
Worse. So I wasn't hit with a truncheon or anything. So
no.
What they did on the 26th against some certain people was worse than what they did with me. So, again, you know, my test case will be easier to extend when it comes up with people who were injured or threatened on the 26th.
You know that,
and other ones that there's other demonstrations in other towns, and also there's a smaller one in Trafalgar Square on the 19th. Of course, that also had TSG attacks.
We've had quite a few tweets on it. Dean met you in Sheffield. It was an honour to meet Piers, he said. Such a trooper.
Oh, that's nice.
Piers was treated like shit, he says, but we protected him the best we could. South Yorkshire Police have questions to answer. And you know what Dean says? Dean says that on that day, his own friend Rob was actually, he actually died, says Dean. He actually died and was revived at the scene.
Well, sort of. He went unconscious.
Ah, I saw that video. I didn't realise that was Dean Smith's mate. Oh, that's in.
No,
well, I'm glad he survived that.
He was protecting me. He got shoved by the police and fell over. Or got knocked over. I mean, I don't know the details, but precisely. But that's what happened. And he's, well, we've got the Sheffield Five now. There's four of us who were arrested, me and three others, and Rob, who was injured. So we're aiming to get justice for all of us.
And at one of these demos, you were clearly told by one of the police officers present that orders to, you know, to break it up and to end it came from, if not the mayor's office, but from the Home Office. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When I was taken away at Trafalgar Square on the 29th of August, I said, hey, guys, why are you doing this? We had a perfectly peaceful event. It's all finished. The people have gone off to Downing Street as agreed, under police escort as agreed. Why this? And the guy said, when I got in the van, he said, Mr. Corbyn, the order for this came from on high.
On high.
Yeah. Which means, you know, high up. And in Sheffield, the following week, I asked a similar question. What's going on? We've already had the rally. Now we're just having a little march. And they said, oh, we're Bronze Command, but the order for this came from Silver Command. But, of course, above that, of course, you've got Gold Command. So, yeah, you know, that's how modern policing works. So, again, it came from on high.
Piers Corbyn is our guest, weatheraction.com. Piers has been a guest speaker at several big anti-lockdown rallies in recent weeks, some of them massive in scale in terms of the amount of people turning up, which is a very heartening thing. The police have arrested him several times. They've issued him with a £10,000 fine. He's taken the fight back to them and asserting his right as a sovereign human being to turn up and speak wherever he feels like it and not to be abused, manhandled, arrested and assaulted. Piers Corbyn is our guest. Here's the question. It's not meant to depress you, this. This is the question. I'm scratching my head all day long. I have been looking at the Great Barrington Declaration. You got these doctors from Harvard. Now, one of the co-authors of that was on this programme last night. That's no big deal, but he was here. You have Sunetra Gupta from Oxford University. It seems to me, increasingly, more of these doctors are managing to cross the line and get onto mainstream television news programmes. Yet the government, on a daily basis, just look at what Nicola Sturgeon has announced today for Scotland. As days go on, they're making life even more difficult, even though opposition voices are being heard more and more. What's happening, Piers? These scientists are getting out there, but nobody's listening.
That's right. Real scientists are speaking out. And I was at Imperial College today at a rally on Queen's Tower lawn. And I said to them, look, Imperial College used to be the beacon of hope, an example for evidence-based science. Now it's got taken over by finances and promoters of the New World Order, and Imperial has to choose. You know, and they listened to me very closely on the lawn, but of course they're all in the pay of Bill Gates and so on, or nearly all of them, or others. I mean, it is corrupt. So. And most of academia is corrupt now. I mean, evidence-based science is being destroyed. Now, your question is, of course, more and more of the public are realising that what is being done is not justifiable in terms of the so-called virus. Whether there's a virus or not, whatever is nothing more serious than a flu.
Yeah.
So there's no justification for them locking down the world economy for a flu. Now, a lot of doctors are realising this, and they're speaking out. They think the virus is either trivial or doesn't exist at all. And, you know, I support them in that. But the government is now getting more and more desperate. So they therefore have to repeat the narrative as often as they can. So they talk of new measures this, new measures that. They're increasing the so-called numbers of people who have got the illness just by increasing the amount of tracking. So they do tracking, certain then you catch more people, say that they have to be tested, then they get tested because 90% of the tests give false positive. They then and declare there's more people with it. Now, it is a complete lie. It's an orchestrated nonsense. But the whole purpose is to justify further crackdowns, limitation of civil rights, closures of businesses, and therefore bringing in a new world order with us all run by mega corporations on low wages and living like they did in George Orwell's book 1984.
Can I come back to that in a minute? I want to make a point about Imperial College London, because you said something, and you, to your credit, are not prone to, I know this is going to sound funny to some listeners who don't agree with you, but you're not prone to wild exaggeration. You're not. But
no,
you said there that everybody or nearly everybody at Imperial College London is in the pay of Gates. I think one of the big problems you have is I think you're right and you're wrong. I think
on this issue, those who are have got anything to do with it or in
but can
or,
I finish like, can I finish that point
on the pay of gas. So somebody who's doing some research into mechanical engineering camshafts or something, you know, that they'll just carry on with that and it won't be affected, of course.
Let me just
make engineers, of course, have to depend on evidence-based science. You can't have airy-fairy nonsense and dogmas running engineering or the aeroplanes wouldn't fly. So the strong thing about Imperial is it has to be based on evidence. However, the funded dogmas, the propaganda for the New World Order has taken over on this issue, which is and many other issues, which is utterly unacceptable.
I want to make my I want to just double down on this point about Imperial College London, and you'll have loads of time to answer it. The point I'm making is, while the institution itself receives funding, and while one or two of the more senior professors or PhDs will be involved in that, one of the problems
well,
you
and
have...
Well, and their projects. It's big projects.
But let me finish.
A lot of money.
Piers, let me finish. No, it's important I finish this. There's no doubt about that. But I would still argue, one of the problems we have, and by, I was going to say you, but I think we all have this problem, is the vast majority of people working in those institutions are not aware that the research they are doing is being paid for by the likes of Gates. And it's the same at the Irish universities and the Belgian universities. Yes, it's corrupt and it's rotten, but the rank and file peers, I would argue, probably don't know and they don't care where the funding comes from. And that's an issue. Maybe if more of them knew. So it's interesting, you were at Imperial College London on the lawn today. If more of them actually knew, but for many of them it might have come as a surprise to them, where the funding
comes. I think it did come as a surprise. I mean, they were listening in silence, actually. There's a fair number there. But more significantly, the student newspaper, Felix, was there, and they reported it in detail, you know. So it'll get around. There will be discussion on this. And I said Imperial has to go back to evidence-based, accountable science. But see, this is what the powers that be are scared of. They're really scared now of our movement growing and growing. And as I said, the rally in Trafalgar Square of 60,000 was the biggest that's ever happened in Trafalgar Square this century. So they've got to somehow isolate us. So obviously, the Mayor of London declares that we're illegal, justifies and therefore has an attack by the TSG. Again, that's to make us look bad and then say that it was something to do with us, the violence. It was absolutely nothing to do with us whatsoever. But there's another little scam going on, if you like. Namely, they will try everything to divide us. And, you know, I would say there's obviously going to be people who will work for the police or whatever, undercover, who knows. But you see, there's they've got an ideal opportunity now for those people who are very worried about various things called conspiracy theories to magnify talk about those things instead of talking about, you know, the mask is bad for you, social distancing doesn't work, like practical things, and you're using your jobs. There'll be people who talk about, rightly or wrongly, other things, which the media then denounce as contagion, as conspiracy theory. And at the same time, they'll have people in the movement attacking me or others and claiming we are agents of the state or police agents or whatever. You know, all that sort of stuff is coming up now. And there's a reason for that, and that is to try and weaken, to disunite, and make the movement look like some sort of crazy conspiracy thing, so-called.
This is a big problem.
Of denouncement, but that's what they're trying to do. Whereas, you see, in reality, we are getting through to people on practical matters of jobs, education, freedom, the right to look after your own body, the right not to be vaccinated, the right to actually breathe properly without a mask. I mean, these are practical things that, you know, we don't want them to get lost, and we have to press ahead with practical things and not let the powers that be divide us or divert us. So we've now launching, it's not just us, of course, I'm from stopnewnormal.net, so is the name of my website for this, but we're also part of a big movement called Our Movement, where, you know, we hope to unite different groups in different towns, because there are different subgroups operating, relying all together to fight every action that the government puts upon us, and resist all aspects in practical terms of the contagion con.
One of the things you mentioned there, I'm going to go back to it. You mentioned people within the movement. Now, I've been from a distance. Mm-hmm. You see, I've always tried to keep my distance as a journalist and as a presenter from any movement, because I don't like the term activist journalism. I think it's it's an oxymoron. You can't be. You've got to keep a distance. But I've noticed it. How does organisations, huge success, 60,000 people turn up at Trafalgar Square. How do you prevent those movements being kind of hijacked by attention seekers and celebrity wannabes who give ridiculous interviews to national newspapers, making the movement itself look stupid? How do you avoid that? I don't see how you can. These truthers turn up out of nowhere. Yeah. What do you do about it?
You can't avoid that. Well, you have to speak clearly the basic message from responsible people. There will always be people who got their own agendas, of course. In some cases, they are just being misled by others. There's people behind them saying, do this, do that, and they haven't thought, and they've done it. So maybe one can explain to some people like that. Others of them, I wonder, but they will hopefully isolate themselves when the public see what actually works. I mean, our demonstration on the 26th of September did work. It did get through to a lot of people. So answer your question is, we just have to, unite and argue with people who are trying to disunite us. If you can find out the source of disunity, I mean, there are various little tiny groups around who, you know, who have various pseudonyms on internet and just attack everybody. Now, it's obvious that they might not even be real people. But there's somebody being paid, you know, to cause this disruption. And people have to be mindful of it rather than just listen to everything that comes out. I mean, you know, the stuff that just is daft. I mean, people were going around saying, it says MP on the back of those police helmets. That means military police. Well, actually, it doesn't. It's Metropolitan Police. So although the police were bad, obviously, yes. But you see, making these statements might get people excited for a few minutes, but it's just not true to say things like that. And we don't do ourselves any good by saying anything at all which is untrue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a huge problem. Funny enough, James Dellingpole was on before you, and we discussed that, about one or two organisations that, you know, otherwise actually do some interesting things, but because they've told whoppers of lies in the past to clickbait, to draw people to their website, they're redundant now. I can't use them. They have no credibility. And that's a huge issue. Piers Corbyn is our guest, 23 minutes to the top of the hour. One of the things I wanted to say to you, you predicted this. When they started introducing these local lockdowns in the last few weeks, the last couple of months, you said, wait till you see, Richie, they'll introduce these local lockdowns and the case numbers will still go up anyway because of the problems with the testing, and they won't change course. And that's borne out to be true. When Boris Johnson was on Andrew Marr's programme on Sunday last, Marr said to him, you lock down Oldham, it's been locked down for weeks now, you lock down a lot of towns in the north, and yet the numbers are going up and up and up and up. Lockdown doesn't work. Johnson mumbled on and Andrew Marr didn't follow up, but you were right. You were absolutely right.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you see, the BBC is just repeating the government narrative. And the BBC is a globalist operation. It's there to implement the New World Order. And I think the BBC should be taken down. I would urge people not to not to pay license fee anymore. And there's two things we've been calling for from StopNewNormal.net, and I urge people to go on the website, and this is obviously part of the Our Movement general concept, is that we should set up Our Movement groups, action groups in every town to unite all the little subgroups together and fight together. And secondly, we should raise the issues of alternative media like yourselves. People have to spend more and more time building local alternative media, promoting national alternative media, and getting, you know, true messages across. Those two things are vital, and there will then all build up general resistance. Because there will be some towns will be different from others. Like in Liverpool, you see, the resistance to all this stuff is really massive, and it could be that Liverpool might be a normal place with people living and working and drinking in a normal way when the rest of the country doesn't, and then they'll become a beacon of hope. Or they might do that and then they'll get occupied by the TSG. I mean, who knows? But you see, there's not enough TSG type police around the country to impose what in fact is a new fascism, and it will do away with local democracy or even national democracy as we know it and impose a new world order. And this is not conspiracy theory, this is what they say. You just have to read Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 and you can see what they intend. Now, these things used to be called conspiracy theory when we announced them, but I would say that on these issues, yesterday's conspiracy theory is today's truth.
And, you know, again, just referencing James Dellingpole, our one written for The Telegraph, written for everybody, really. And James said something very similar. You know, he talked about the Great Reset. He talked about Agenda 2030. And he accepts it, you know, and it must be difficult for him. It must have been difficult for you. You're a man of science. You're,
of course.
You know, you for many years you were a mainstream politician, very well-known councillor. Obviously, you've got a very well-known brother. Doesn't come easy for you to be talking about these things.
No, it's not something you want to believe. And going back to Imperial College, it's like heartbreaking to see these students walking around in masks, and most of them, not all of them, but a fair number of them saying, look, I'm protecting myself. I'm protecting you. I said, no, you're not. That mask you've got, it's like asking a fence to stop a fly. It doesn't work. It reduces the amount of air you can breathe and therefore cuts your oxygen supply by 4%. And it catches the things you're trying to breathe out, toxins your body's trying to expel. They get stuck in the mask and you breathe them back in again. So it's an unhealthy thing. You're not doing anything good by wearing the mask. It's bad. So this thing like, oh, just in case of something, I'll wear it. No. Just in case of danger, do not wear it.
It's amazing, isn't it? The precautionary principle seems to have been thrown by the wayside.
Right. It's been upside down.
Why would you wear it? And yet I come across people here in Salford cycling wearing them, which I find I'm incredulous. And I am reliably informed
that will really cut down their oxygen and will
and could hurt them.
They could have a crash. They could faint on the bike. You know.
Did you tell me? And I think you did. And I think it was in the press. A jogger took very ill and passed away. And passed away.
A jogger did pass away, yeah.
Oh, what are we going to do, Piers? And you know, 60,000 in Trafalgar. Listeners are asking me, as far as you know, are there any plans to for similar protests, you know, to attract bigger numbers?
Yeah. Basically, if you come on our website, StopNewNormal.net, or Stand Up X or Save Our Rights, you'll find the details. Specific things coming up right now. Tomorrow, I'm going to be in Oxford, 12 noon at Bond Square. Big rally there. Then tomorrow evening, we're having a new initiative, which is, well, actually following Liverpool, if you like. 9:45 p.m. at Old Compton Street in Soho, we're going to have a rally against the curfew. So we're having outside the pubs after 10, we'll be saying drink against the curfew, drink against the curfew. So you'll carry your cans of beer or whatever outside and therefore defy the lockdown effectively. Good. And we're asking all towns everywhere to do that and text us and say, where is this happening? What are you doing? And give the information. There's a hashtag on it, something like, I don't know, drink against the COVID lockdown, something like that. But if you go to my Twitter feed, @Piers_Corbyn, you'll find the hashtags on that. I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me at this moment. Well, but there's got to be all ways of resisting this stuff, you know, and that is just one. Other events, Saturday, there's a lot of demonstrations in London in solidarity with the Germans who are trying to get a million on the streets.
Again, that will be the second time.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
So there's in London and all over the country, and on Sunday I'll be in Cardiff.
You'll be in Cardiff on Sunday. StopNewNormal.net. Let me ask you this before I run out of time, and thanks for coming back. It is apparent now, it must be to the vast majority of people who were furloughed. They must know that they're screwed economically. They must be able to see it. And yet, if you go on social media now, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, even in public, even in supermarkets, they seem to be all the more willing to cooperate with their own destruction. Why, Piers? I can't, for the life of me, they know they're screwed. And yet
they do, but they're also brainwashed. They don't want to believe they're screwed. I mean, the trade unions have betrayed them big time. The Labour Party's betrayed them big time. But there were six Labour MPs who voted against the whole measures. Long Bailey and Graham Stringer, to name two, you know. Graham Stringer's a great guy, and he's been, you know, he stood with what I was saying about climate. So, you know, there is some hope, within MPs, and a number of Tories, of course, stood. So we have to build on those. We have to get them speaking in public. And that is a kind of bridge to get the general population more aware. But, you see, beware of the divisions now being... We're trying to be tricked into divisions to make us look weak and isolated when we're not. We are actually stronger than ever. But to get through to that, people like that who are, you just have to give them leaflets, talk to them one by one, get them to look at social media and so on. And, you know, we must be having an effect, otherwise we wouldn't be going up at such a tremendous rate. But you're right, the people who believe it, some of them are so now, you know, really strongly believe it. They become obsessed with it. Because I had somebody in the street, a person I know, saying, Piers, what you're doing is killing people. No, this is deranged. This is completely deranged. There's nothing there by any measures, anything more than a flu. Yet I'm accused of killing people. So these people are being brainwashed, and you have to somehow work out and try and understand how they got to this, and it is not easy. But it's not new. History of the world shows that there's been often brainwashing, like the Incas and the Mayas used to kill virgins, sacrifice virgins every spring to ensure that the summer was good. And they carried on doing it, and it worked. So they carried on doing it because, you know, the bishop, so-called, in charge of them, tell them this, and they go through a ritual and an incantation and they do it. So we now have a satanic ritual and incantation system with people wearing masks, thinking they're protecting themselves and doing all this stuff. So it is dangerous unless people who understand stand up. And, you know, it's not just a matter of doing nothing and sort of accepting it quietly but not agreeing with it. You've got to actually not wear the mask, not do the social distancing, not just leave the pub, but you've got to drink outside. You've got to get the message across to everybody that it is a con, and then we can win and force the politicians to actually do a U-turn. And if they don't, we have to get rid of them.
Get rid of them, eh? And replace them with something else, because left and right these days, left, right, liberal, conservative, two sides of the one coin, it doesn't matter. I know you still have a leg in it. I know you do. I know you still pine for the days of real socialism, but it doesn't exist
anymore.
Well,
whatever. But I think it's an important thing to understand about the future. There's three ways it can go. One is we can all be locked down into a really evil dystopia, which I repeat, George Orwell got it right. It's a new fascism. It is there, and they say it. If you read World Economic Forum and Agenda 21, it's clear what it is. That's one thing could go. The other thing is we could win, and then we say, we're not having any more representatives of us with conflicts of interest. Nobody representing any big operation is allowed to be prime minister or anything on any cabinet. And MPs ought to be, basically the same wages as people they represent. I mean, a whole lot of things about accountability, a new accountable democracy. We have to build that. Now, we haven't discussed the economic model, but whatever, it's got to be an accountable democracy. Now, it's one of those two. Or some people say, oh, we can just go back to how we were last year. But that will never happen. That will never happen. If we lose, we'll go back to a dystopia, something evil. If we win, we're not going to want that this nonsense, which has led to where we are now with, you know, corruption in the highest places, with cabinet ministers having conflicts of interest, making money out of vaccine programs and so on. That is just totally evil and unacceptable. So there isn't a third way. There's not a third moderate way. It's either evil or something, which we hope can be potentially amazingly better.
Great to have you back, mate. I will follow, obviously, like everybody else will, as closely as possible, your legal, I won't say battle, but maybe it will be a battle, but you taking the Metropolitan Police to court, I think justifiably, hugely important that. Stop New Normal.
Thank you very much.
It's stopnewnormal.net, isn't it? Stopnewnormal.
That is the one. Exactly
.net
that.
And weatheraction.com. Do support people like Piers Corbyn. When you're sitting at home watching the football on a Saturday or on a Tuesday, he's out there in the piss and rain, in the cold, speaking to people, handing out leaflets. He really does do it, basically day in, day out. So support him. Help him out if you can. Weatheraction.com, stopnewnormal.net. Godspeed, my friend. I look forward to speaking to you again really soon.
Thank you very much, Richie. And hello and good luck to everybody in taking the fight forward in their own way.
Cheers, Piers.
Others.
Thanks very much, my friend. Piers Corbyn, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's at 10 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Yeah. Good stuff. Taking him to court. Interesting to see what comes of that. And a number of you were annoyed when I mentioned the violence. Listen, you've been with me long enough now. I wasn't suggesting that protesters started the fights or the violence. Of course not. The police Piers refers to are obviously not here. And they have publicly stated, and I'm not sure I believe them. I shouldn't say that, maybe. But they've publicly stated that, you know, some of the protesters, some of the assembled group became violent. So you've got to put that point of view across. That's how it works, right? Doesn't mean I believe it. There was an interesting exchange between people who were at the protest, one of the protests, about some a particularly violent scene. I tweeted a link to a particularly violent scene where a woman, I think wearing a green skirt or a green dress, was violently pulled off a chair and was basically smashed to the ground by a policeman. And that made, that obviously was seen by millions of people, that. A distressing scene, right? But what was very interesting about that was how quickly some people were to take to Twitter and claim that it was fake somehow. That the woman was an actress or a crisis actress of some form or another. And a very funny thing that made me laugh, because the video was very distressing, it looked pretty serious to me, was somebody said the woman's accent was too outrageous. She couldn't really have been Irish. She must have been somebody putting on an Irish accent. When I heard the woman speaking afterwards, somebody videoed her, she sounded pretty Irish to me and had a strong West of Ireland accent. But these are mad times. And we are surrounded by people who they've been lied to so many times by so many people that they've gotten into a place in their lives where they just can't believe anything. Where everything becomes instantly dismissed out of hand. Everything, every single thing has to be a lie or faked. And I don't know how. And I don't say this now to be critical. I don't know how people live like that. Not everything is fake. There must be tangibly real, genuine occurrences. Things must happen. Whether they're, you know, manipulated or not. Whether everything is manipulated or not. But within the overarching manipulation, you know, genuine things do happen. I took it that the video was real. The lady was assaulted. She'd been berating a police officer, and in another frame she'd stood on a chair. And anyway, look, what do I know? 7.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Let me tell you about tomorrow's programme. I'll be joined by Dean Henderson, live from Missouri tomorrow. I love Dean. I think you like Dean as well. And I'm looking forward to it. Fiona Marie Flanagan will be live with me from Bolly Ochaclea tomorrow from Dublin. Fiona has been on one time. Very good. Very good researcher. Very articulate woman. And I immensely enjoyed our conversation, despite the dark nature of it. The dark nature of every conversation these days, of course, about COVID. But Fiona will be with me tomorrow. I'll be speaking to Kevin Myers very early next week. I've got a copy, and I highly recommend it, by the way. I've got a copy right here of her book, his book, Jesus. Kevin Myers, Burning Heresies, A Memoir of a Life in Conflict, 1979 to 2020. It's a fantastic read. Endorsed by the great and oft-mentioned Jean-Anne Crowley. Wonderful broadcaster, actress, columnist, overachiever, all the rest of it. She's read it too. Terrific book. Kevin will be with me on Monday. And I've got some other exciting guests next week as well. And if I didn't mention this, I'd be a right bastard, so I'll mention it. Jonathan Royle, who's a hypnotherapist and a successful hypnotherapist, if I can say it, but he's also a very successful stage performer, as an entertainer, as a hypnotherapist. He said to me, Richie, give me a mention. Give me a mention. His documentary, Extreme Danger, Extreme Hypnosis, which I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Richard Willett might have been involved in. Richard's a great lad. He's been on the programme as well before. Extreme Danger, Extreme Hypnosis, which is a brilliant film, by the way. It's going to be screened this coming Sunday, the 11th of October. I'm going to put a link out to it now in a moment. 8 o'clock UK time, which is midday Pacific time, the west coast of America, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Extreme Danger, Extreme Hypnosis will be screened at 8 o'clock UK time. You can figure out the other times yourself, this Sunday. And he's asked me to give it a mention, has Jonathan. I did tweet it, didn't I? I did. And as I'm speaking to you now, dear listener, I'm tweeting it right now, a link to it. I've just tweeted a link to it. Extreme Danger, Extreme Hypnosis. They were very kind and sent me the key to watching the film. The film. And before I interviewed Jonathan, and it's brilliant, so I said I'd give it a mention, and I've done just that. I've not got any bloody tune lined up. I was absolutely glued to Piers Corbyn, what Piers was telling me. So I've got no exit tune lined up today. Yeah, and you've been asking me about phone-ins. We had a very powerful phone-in last Thursday, he says, modestly. At least I found it to be a very powerful experience. We had some incredible calls, mostly from people calling first time to the programme. So I'll fit another phone in. I'm not sure I'll do it next week, but I promise it'll be the following week. And just to reiterate something I said yesterday, because some of you didn't understand what I was saying to you yesterday. The one and only Dr. Vernon Coleman is taking a bit of a step away for a bit of awe and awe. Okay, so he won't be joining me for the foreseeable future. He's been on with me for a few weeks on Mondays, and it's been terrific to have him on the programme. That was facilitated because he was being increasingly censored on YouTube. He's moved to brandnewtube.com. Do subscribe to him there. And he will be periodically, I think, uploading episodes of an old man in a chair to that platform. But for the time being, he won't be with me, and he won't be doing as many episodes of his own brilliant video series. All right? Okay. He sent me a lovely email. We exchanged a couple of emails about that. So before too long, he'll be back before too long, hopefully. But he's worked pretty hard in the last 7 months, I think. Incredibly hard. And I think he needs a break. And it takes its toll. Takes its toll on people dealing with this information every day of the week. It takes its toll. It is very depressing stuff a lot of the time that you're dealing with and listening to. And it's affecting a lot of people. And you've got to look out for that as well. Closing out the programme with David Bowie. Thanks again to Jonathan. Jesus, Richie. Thanks to James Dellingpole. Thank you, James. The Delling Pod, dellingpoleworld.com. And thanks again to Piers Corbyn, stopnewnormal.net. Going out with David Bowie. All right. Speak tomorrow. Look after yourselves and one another. Until then, bye.